5, and this is federal rules on elocution. Michelle Kohler, and just by way of process, this is an item that came to us through what we call a blue sheet, which is a process that the commissioners use to request information of staff. At the end of each of our meetings, if we have an item of interest, we bring forward a blue sheet, present it to the rest of the commission, and we vote on whether or not we want this to be a future agenda item. So that's where this came from, and we appreciate it. Michelle, you're answering our questions.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair Thorburn, and Commissioners, and Director Unsworth. This was a blue sheet that came forward from the Commission in June of this year, specifically requesting what is meant by the terms of overfishing and overfished in the federal context, and how is overfishing determined, and how does that relate to, in particular, our spawning escapement goals for salmon. I'm Michelle Culver, and I'm with the Intergovernmental Ocean Policy Unit within the FISH program. And if we get some very specific technical questions, I'll first preface the PowerPoint and the presentation and the briefing materials in the summary sheet as being heavy on acronyms and some federal jargon. It's a very complicated subject, and I'll do my best to address your questions to the extent that they get fairly technical, and what's the difference between an average and a geometric mean, and how is that calculated. I may ask Dr. McIsaac to help me explain those things. So with that, as an overview of the presentation, I'm going to just touch upon regional fishery management councils and the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act requirements for those councils, which is where the requirements come from relative to overfishing and overfished, and what is termed a status determination criteria. So as the name implies, that is determining what is the status of the different stocks that are under federal management, and those criteria are applied in a stock-specific manner. There's also an international exception that's provided for in the MSA, and a lot of our salmon stocks in particular fall under that international exception category, and I'll get into a little bit more detail about that. The requirements also include addressing overfishing and rebuilding if a stock is deemed to be overfished, and I will get into diving a little bit more into the details of the salmon fishery management plan and the process that would be used to revise those status determination criteria if that's a path that folks want to go. So the Magnuson Act, and a lot of you are already familiar with this, but it created 8 of these regional fishery management councils. They make their recommendations to the Secretary of Commerce. The regulations that implement those policy decisions are adopted by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and the councils focus their management on fisheries that are in federal waters. It's referred to as the Exclusive Economic Zone, or EEZ, that extends from 3 to 200 miles offshore, and they do that management, they prescribe the management for those fisheries in these fishery management plans. So on the West Coast, we have the Pacific Fishery Management Council, and that's comprised of 14 voting members, including representatives from the states of California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. It also includes voting members from National Marine Fisheries Service, and the treaty tribes have a representative as well. Their overall purpose is to conserve and manage fish, anadromous species, and other resources in the EEZ through those fishery management plans. And through the MSA, stocks are classified in those plans as being in the fishery. Those are primarily stocks that are targeted by fisheries or ecosystem component species, which are generally not targeted, but perhaps caught incidentally as harvesters are targeting those in the fishery stocks. The council also promotes the protection of essential fish habitat for the stocks that they manage, and they take into account broader ecosystem considerations in making their decisions. The council has four FMPs. The salmon FMP primarily covers Chinook and Coho and sometimes pink salmon in odd-numbered years. The groundfish plan has over 100 species that includes Pacific whiting or hake, flatfish except for Pacific halibut, rockfish, sablefish, also referred to as black cod and ling cod. There's also a FMP for what's called coastal pelagic species. These are primarily your forage fish. They're going to be anchovy, sardine, mackerel, and squid. And in this case, these are the smaller market squid, what you would order in a restaurant for calamari, for example. There's also an FMP for highly migratory species, which include your five tropical tunas, swordfish, some coastal pelagic sharks as well. And then there's a fishery ecosystem plan through which the council receives annual updates on the state of the California current ecosystem and tracks the Pacific decadal oscillation and environmental conditions, the warm water, El Nino events, that type of thing, to try and take those factors into account in looking at managing their fisheries for the coming year. So under the Magnuson Act, the requirements include the status determination criteria, and specifically there are overfishing thresholds. So for each stock, the council would need to determine what is the threshold that it will use to determine whether or not overfishing is happening. And by overfishing, that is means at this time you're harvesting more, your exploitation rate, you're harvesting at a higher rate than what the population could sustain over for the long term. There's annual catch limits, which are also required, and we'll get into a little bit more of the specifics for relative to which stocks those would be required for. And then if a stock is deemed to be overfished, then there are rebuilding requirements. And the rebuilding requirement in the MSA states to rebuild in as short as time as possible based on the biology of the stock, but not to exceed 10 years, taking into account the needs of fishing communities. So I'm just going to pause there for a minute and want to go back and note that the MSA is national in its application, and it is trying to prescribe status determination criteria for stocks that are managed throughout the United States on the East Coast and in the Gulf, as well as off of Alaska and the West Coast. And so trying to come up with a requirement that is a one-size-fits-all, and then having those eight regional councils all comply with that requirement. And on the Pacific Council, having stocks that are managed by the Pacific Council that range with a life history of 1 year to over 100 years, and trying to develop criteria and rebuilding structures for all of those stocks to meet this requirement is challenging. So It does get fairly complicated in its application. So in particular, as the council struggled with meeting these requirements for salmon, given the salmon's life history characteristic, the fishing that occurs on a salmon stock has little effect on the ability of that stock to achieve MSY or achieve a long-term sustainable level. So fishing that occurs this year has little effect on that stock's ability to be sustainable over the next 100 years, as an example. And you often cannot, you can't rectify being in an overfished state. That is, you can't rebuild that stock in as short as time as possible by simply no longer fishing. So the stock that's going to be returning next year, if you were to stop fishing, is not going to be able to accomplish the long-term goal of rebuilding that stock to its level.
I have a question and a lot of information, so I'll ask it if anybody else has a question. So MSY is
maximum sustainable yield. How is that a conservation goal? That sounds more like a fishing goal than a conservation goal.
Yes. So the term maximum sustainable yield, and then I appreciate the question, and I'll get into a little bit more about how that specifically applies in the salmon context. But for the salmon FMP, for example, we tie the overfishing threshold to the spawning escapement goal. So it's given that fishing has little effect and the ability to recover, quickly rebuild a stock by adjusting your fishing the following year or in the future, that's a particular challenge for salmon given their life history. The term MSY, which is in the Magnuson Act, the interpretation and implementation to comply with that in the salmon FMP what is using the escapement goals. And that's where the conservation comes in relative to achieving it for salmon.
Thank you. Okay. That's helpful. Any other questions? Thank you.
So just to touch on the stocks that are in the fishery, these include targeted and non-targeted stocks, so includes ESA stocks. Stocks can be managed in complexes, so in groups, and then there is an indicator stock with similar life history characteristics, and all of the stocks that are managed in the FMP are required to have those status determination criteria and annual catch limits. As I mentioned, there is an international exception, so any stock that is subject to a bilateral or a multilateral treaty, so in this case, the Pacific Salmon Treaty, to which the United States is a party, can qualify for an international exception. And for those stocks, the status determination criteria is still required, but annual catch limits are not. Additionally, the salmon FMP also includes, goes beyond the requirements of the MSA, also includes status determination criteria for Canadian Chinook and Coho, which are not managed under the FMP. As I mentioned, ecosystem component stocks are those that are generally not targeted but are incidentally caught while harvesters are targeting those stocks that are in the fishery. Those stocks, in some cases, are still under the fishery management plan. And for those stocks, we generally just monitor what their catches are over time. And those stocks are also still required to have status determination criteria, but not annual catch limits. So in the salmon FMP, the stocks that have that international exception are Puget Sound Coho, Washington Coast Coho, Columbia River Summer Chinook, and Canadian Chinook and Coho. And for stock complexes, there's a Klamath River Fall Chinook, that's an indicator stock, and then the council decided to use Sacramento River Fall Chinook as indicators for Southern Oregon, Northern California Chinook, and Central Valley Fall and Late Fall Chinook. Ecosystem component stocks include those non-ESA, what are termed as far north migrating Chinook and pink stocks, so those that go up through the North Pacific area. The ecosystem component stocks are the stocks that are listed here that include those in Willapa Bay, Grays Harbor, Queets, Ho, Quileute, and the Hoco, Columbia River Basin, and Oregon Coast, Fallen Spring Chinook. So this is just to remind folks, recognized in the FMP are these migratory routes that Pacific salmon take, and so there's a recognition that the council's jurisdiction in managing these stocks is very limited, and the Chinook and Coho stocks that are in the FMP have migratory routes and are intercepted off of British Columbia and Alaska fisheries before returning to the West Coast to spawn. So with that in mind, the salmon FMP focuses its action items relative to overfishing or overfished to be to notify and consult with the appropriate multilateral management entity, given that those stocks are intercepted in multiple fisheries by both the U.S. and Canada.
Can I add? But that's advisory and in no way regulatory. So really the burden falls on the terminal fishery.
In some cases, it depends on what action is deemed to be necessary. So in the salmon FMP, the status determination criteria uses the most recent 3-year average for fishing and spawning escapement. So this is the post-season review of the harvest estimate that has occurred. And overfishing is deemed to have occurred if, in that post-season review, the catch exceeded the maximum fishery mortality threshold that was set. And in most cases, there are stock-specific thresholds that are in the FMP that are 50% or 75% of the MSY or the spawning escapement. So the stock-specific estimates of fishing that are used, there was a meta-analysis that was done for Chinook in 2011, and that was deemed to be 0.78 or fishing at a rate of 78%. And overfishing determinations are made annually. They're based on a post-season estimate of exploitation that occurred in that one single year. So the take-home message here is that the council has a salmon technical team that's comprised of scientists and biologists from all of those agencies and management entities, and each year they do a post-season report, and they review what the exploitation rates were for each of those stocks in the FMP and produce a report annually, and then will notify the council if in that year harvest was at too high of an exploitation rate for a given stock. Once the council is notified of that, then there's prescribed actions that need to be taken. It's a notification to NIMS of here's what the STT's findings were, and direction that's given to the STT to assess what's the mortality rates in fisheries impacting those stocks of concern, and immediately take action to ensure council fisheries are not contributing to overfishing. And then, as I mentioned, given that the majority of these stocks, especially those in that international exception, are subject to fisheries that are outside of the council's jurisdiction, then there's a notification that's given to those management entities of that status. And an attempt is made to calculate a total exploitation rate. So what was that stock subject to in exploitation, both in the lower 48 and up through Alaska? So there's also a step that's in between overfishing and overfished in the salmon FMP, and it's termed approaching overfished. And so basically, as the salmon technical team does their review every year and compares what the exploitation rates are for each of those stocks, an approaching overfished condition is a case where they've had 2 years of where post-season estimates indicate overfishing, and it looks like the pre-season estimate for the coming year, based on an average across those 3 years, they would think that the stock may be approaching an overfished condition. So it looks, they haven't met escapement for 2 years in a row. It looks like pre-season estimates are not going to meet it for that third year. The reaction to being approaching overfished is basically the same as it would be if the stock is deemed to be overfished, with the exception of the last item, which is to direct the team to propose a rebuilding plan. So it's more of an early heads up. The notification is made to NIMS and those other management entities, and there's a forward looking of, is there anything that the council can do? Is what are council fisheries contributing to that status? And then after the third year, if the three-year average is such that the stock is determined to be overfished, then the council would direct the salmon technical team to propose a rebuilding plan, bring that back to the council for its consideration within 1 year. So the in both, in the overfishing, approaching overfished, and the overfished, the first step is that the council notifies the National Marine Fisheries Service that here's the findings of their salmon technical team, which includes NIMS scientists on it. And then National Marine Fisheries Service is actually the agency that makes the status determination and communicates that status in writing as a formal communication back to the council. So once that formal communication occurs, then the council must implement a rebuilding plan within 2 years of receiving that notification. So the rebuilding plans must include an evaluation of the roles of fishing, marine, and freshwater survival. So the salmon technical team, working with a broader group of scientists, would take a deeper dive into examining what was the role that fishing played in contributing to that state for that particular stock. Are there other environmental conditions, marine and freshwater survival? You've also heard, you know, testimony relative to sea lions and birds and whales. And so what's the natural mortality been for that particular stock over this period of time? And trying to determine, you know, whether fishing is it was a contributing factor, was the key factor that resulted in where the stock is today. There's a default rebuilt criteria that's in the plan, which is that the most recent three-year average of your spawning escapement is basically above goal, that you're achieving spawning escapement for 3 years, and that is when that stock is determined to be rebuilt. Through this development of the rebuilding plan, the technical team has the ability to come up with other recommendations and bring those back to the council if there's other criteria that they think should be used instead of that default that's in the plan. And then They would also recommend any actions relative to fishing. Again, that's under the council's jurisdiction that may contribute to rebuilding the stock, and a specified rebuilding period. And the default rebuilding periods, again, in the FMP, are 5 years for Chinook, 3 years for Coho, and 2 years for pink salmon. So the SDT can recommend a different rebuilding period depending on the stock, or it can go with what the default is in the FMP. If a stock is at the point of where achieving spawning escapement in a particular year is not going to be possible. So even if we were to stop fishing on that stock, we're still not going to meet escapement. Then there's what is termed a de minimis factor that could be taken into consideration. So there are de minimis fishing provisions that are in place in the FMP for most of the stocks in the FMP, but not all of them. And a de minimis level of fishing is basically fishing at a much lower reduced rate, but it's still allowing or recognizing in some cases that incidental harvest is going to occur in fisheries perhaps that aren't even targeting salmon. And so not looking at just closing salmon fishing, but other fisheries, groundfish fishing, for example, that may intercept salmon, and making sure that we're looking at it from a broader fishing community context, and the intent is not to try to rebuild a salmon stock within 1 year by closing not only salmon fisheries, but all the fisheries that could potentially intercept salmon, and thus creating some economic hardships for our communities. So again, most of the stocks have that de minimis fishing provision, and the council, there had not been one for Sacramento River Falls Chinook. The council said that they would like to have one, and to have one that's similar to the Klamath River Falls Chinook approach that was taken in the FMP. And Southern Oregon Coast Chinook does not have that de minimis fishing provision. So finally, the process that is needed to revise those status determination criteria in the FMP. So to the extent that the FMP prescribes the criteria in a formulaic way, so if, for example, the threshold that is used to determine whether overfishing is occurring in 1 year, and so there's, again, stock-specific thresholds, they're either 50% of the spawning escapement or 75%. So changing that formula in the FMP would require a plan amendment. And a plan amendment is a process that usually takes over the course of three council meetings. There's usually an environmental impact statement that accompanies that, and considerable opportunity for stakeholder input and analysis of the impacts of changing those criteria. If, on the other hand, there's a good scientific reason that comes forward, perhaps there's some new scientific information that's considered and reviewed by the salmon technical team and the council's scientific and statistical committee, then if the council deems that new scientific information is sufficient to justify a modification to the status determination criteria, or wants to modify the conservation objective. So if, for example, for one of the stocks that are managed in Washington, if Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, together with the tribal co-managers, came forward and said for a particular stock, we wanted to revise the conservation objective. That is the spawning escapement goal for a particular run. Then we could also do that without having to do a plan amendment. And so that is done through what's termed a notice and comment rulemaking. So it's usually a quicker, easier process, a two-meeting process, still requires notification, stakeholder input, and the intent to do something is published in the Federal Register along with their final decision on rulemaking. So with that, I will see if you have any questions.
Commissioners? Yes. Commissioner Baker.
It's hard for us to look back on the genesis of Commissioner Wecker's blue sheet. But to me, when I read through it, it looks to me like it's asking in terms this is my question, is this accurate? It looks to me like that there have been times when state and federal fishery managers disagree or there's some conflict. And so, for instance, she asked whether NOAA has the authority to adjust harvest to allow increased escapement as habitat conditions are restored. And then the question before, what you were just talking about, is how the state can adjust their conservation objectives and escapement goals. Is that a thing, or did she just really want us to get a primer on this process?
So I'm not aware if there was a specific example in mind, but I might look to see if Director Unsworth or if Ron Warren has something specific to address in that case. But I guess the short answer to the question is that it's not something that National Marine Fisheries Service would do unilaterally or independently. It is a consideration that would come through the council process, which includes National Marine Fisheries Service. So it is something that they could raise to the council as a concern or something that they want the council to discuss. But it would go through the process that I just described here on this slide, and it would be discussed by the council, voted on by the council, of whether or not that's something they want to pursue. It wouldn't just be something that NIMS would do.
So Ron stood up. Does that mean something?
Madam Chair, I think Ron will help enlighten us a little bit. Okay. But as I recall, that I think it was either Willapa or Grays Harbor.
Yeah. It was Willapa. Yeah.
One year they were
overfished, and then the next year
they weren't.
Yes.
So
that was where it came from.
Thank you. That was exactly what I was coming up to say. So I'll just go back to the back room.
Or not.
Yeah.
Yes. So I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know about the commission, but me, I'm thinking, well, I should probably have Michelle give this to me again.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
But there is a lot of information here, a lot
yeah.
of acronyms, and certainly very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes,
Commissioner Grable.
Well, Michelle, thank you again for a very thorough presentation. We've notices have come out from NIMS or NOAA and saying that they've determined these species have been overfished or have the potential. And I just wanted to know, well, what does that mean? You know, how do we know if we're approaching these thresholds? And then if we have that, if they have made that status, then what do we do? So you've answered those questions here today. I just, the first time I saw those notices, I didn't know, well, what criteria are they using? And so thank you again for answering those questions.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll probably have you back again. And we could have a little primer on the acronyms. I think that would be helpful. Maybe Dr. McIsaac, Commissioner McIsaac, for us.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. If you want to look at a lot of acronyms, you can find them in the Pacific Fishery Management Council process. That's for sure. And in fact, I think there is a list of certain pages. But as long as I had the floor, I just wanted to compliment Michelle and all the good work she's done at the Pacific Fishery Management Council, along with all the other staff that go there and continues to do so.
Thank you. Okay, so with that, we are at